Please be warned that this program contains mature subject matter and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today is December the 8th. Time is 1:20 p.m. This is Michael Biancugli. I'm about to make a phone call in reference to a message I received about a statewide ABT church to be conducted on the 18th or 19th of December in Houston, Texas. I'm calling James Sampsell first. He is the Region 4 inside major for the Aryan Brotherhood.
What's up, ugly motherfucker?
You're listening to My Aryan Princess from the Dallas Morning News, written by Scott Farwell and edited by Mike Wilson and Leona Allen. I'm Christopher Wynn. If you haven't listened to Chapter 1, go back and start from the top to get the whole story. Chapter 2, A Place in the Family.
There's no pain at first when knuckles strike bone. Just a flash of bright light, a loud buzz, a brain reboot. Carol Blevins lives with men who express frustration with their fists, so she knows how to take a punch. But this one felt different. It was as if she'd walked into a bowling ball, one dropped from an overpass. Michael Crash Biancugli is small, 5'8", 160, but he was fueled by heroin withdrawal when he met Carol at a North Dallas hotel in August 2007. It didn't take long for his flint-like temper to spark. My face was black, both my eyes were black, Carol said. I remember being thrown around a hotel room and wondering when the cops were going to come. And they never came. Crash says he beat Carol the way some people discipline a dog, reluctantly and always as a last resort. Last year, he sipped a double bourbon and Coke at a biker bar in Tyler, remembering a time when Carol threatened to report his drug dealing to police. I told her to sit her bitch ass down or I was going to kill her, he said. And I was dead serious. I would have killed her. I'm not joking, and that's not a figure of speech. Violence was a fixture in their relationship, the way date night is for other couples. The drama was as addictive as the drugs. It's hard to explain unless you're in it, said Carol, who was 29 at the time. Crash would beat, and then beg me to forgive him. It's twisted, but it made me feel like I had some control. In Carol's world, Crash was a catch. He was a 39-year-old captain in the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, and a comer. He commanded a few hundred ABT soldiers and moved about $20,000 worth of hard drugs through North Texas each week. Crash proposed to Carol their first night together and claimed her as his girlfriend, a Featherwood. He bought her a $700 Seiko watch to match his own and a $2,000 diamond engagement ring. His and her tattoos sealed the deal, Crash in italic across her lower back, Carol on his left forearm. When it was good, Carol said. He did treat me like a princess. She shopped for wedding dresses with her mother, bought jewelry, and imagined a church wedding with sprays of red and white roses, the Brotherhood's signature colors. In the fantasy, her family sat on one side of the chapel, eyes shining with approval and pride. On the other, bald-headed Aryan brothers grinned in sunglasses. I was gung-ho ABT, she said. It made perfect sense to me. The ABT refers to itself as the family, an appeal to people from broken homes, those with corrosive drug habits and smoldering anger. Many of its members grow up poor, white, and burdened by the word trash. Carol's childhood was comparatively carefree. She grew up in an insular white world with white friends, a place where racial stereotypes were assumed to be true, perhaps because no one of color was there to challenge them. It was a time when Archie Bunker's blue-collar bigotry gave way to racist riffs by George Jefferson, each character ignorant but good-hearted, projecting full-color comedy through a black-and-white negative. At home, her dad grumbled, "Don't you dare bring home a nigger," but her mother often tut-tutted him into silence. I grew up with it, Carol said. Once I was on the street, it reinforced every racial stereotype. Blacks, Asians, Latinos, all of them. She used the N-word so often it lost its sting, so she sprinkled in the ABT's vile epithet, toads. After a decade of hurt, Carol began to act hard. "Nobody messed with me back then, especially after Crash taught me I was an Aryan princess," she said. "I thought very highly of myself." But Crash sensed something else in his fiancée. She seemed panicked underneath the pride, as if she had stumbled out of a desert and was gulping cool water. "Carol just has a need to be part of something," he said, "and it doesn't make a shit difference who she's with, what color, race, nationality, or what job they do. She just has a need to belong."
One of the things that the ABT would typically do every month is they would hold what they call church meetings. And in these church meetings, what would occur is they would discuss their criminal activity. They would collect dues for the organization. And they would discuss gang business.
There was a vote made. Right, well, because you weren't at church last month. But,
I know.
Did you call the old man?
The Brotherhood evolved into an organized crime syndicate operating outside prison, and its leaders realized white separatism was bad for business. The gang's constitution was revised to reflect new priorities. The ABT is no longer solely based on the precepts of racial ideology. If there was money in it, the Brotherhood would work with other gangs. Crash thrived under the new edict. With Latino relatives at home and a crack cocaine business dependent on black drug dealers, he navigated neighborhoods where people eyeball white boys, especially white boys with Nazi tats, but understand it often takes a racial plurality to get paid. Carol learned that lesson the hard way. The Brotherhood urges new recruits to take their place atop a mythical human hierarchy, one sorted by skin color. Women cannot join the gang, technically, but Carol bought into her white birthright, something akin to being born into aristocracy. So, a few days after meeting Crash, a group of black men catcalled as she walked across a hotel parking lot. Carol spun and uncorked a stream of vulgarities, racial epithets, and threats. "My man is ABT," she said. "He'll kick all your asses." Seething, the men marched behind her to a nearby auto shop, prepared to put a beatdown on Crash. The business owner, who was black, brokered peace as Crash dragged Carol into a nearby office. "I slapped the dog shit out of her two or three times," Crash said. "That bitch almost got me killed that day." Carol broke Featherwood rule number one: keep your mouth shut. As in life, ABT policy and practice are often two very different things. On one hand, gang leaders extol women as the wellspring of the race. They should be coveted, protected, and respected. On the other, they are chattel, disposable and interchangeable, serfs in a male monarchy. Carol wanted to be an ABT old lady, Crash said, and that's how she was treated. Featherwoods are expected to be servile, deferential, and unflinchingly loyal. They know when to look away. You can't testify to what you don't see. And to cast their eyes downward when entering a room full of brothers. They know how to be invisible while filling drinks and delivering food, but savvy enough to serve the ranking officer in the room first. Carol mastered the masquerade until she hit the crack pipe. Aryan Princess was her nickname, and at times she could be just that, Crash said. The problem was, she always seemed to have a scam for what she wanted, or there was an ultimatum, and that's when she became a liability.
Okay, the time is 7:03 p.m. It is Wednesday, December 7th. My name is Steve Lair, Task Force Officer, ICE National Gang Unit. With me is ICE Special Agent Steve Cabot, National Gang Unit, and Michael Wade, Dion Cooley.
All right, last night, you with me, Steve?
Yep.
Last night, I was making some calls. Well, actually, when we left here last night, I received a phone call from
one of my contacts with the AC.
Hustlers play positional pool, a game of angles and spin. Crash and Steve Lair, a gang detective from the Carrollton Police Department, understood the finesse of the game when they met in 2005. Lair busted Crash for pimping and identity theft, but instead of booking him, he proposed a deal. If the ABT captain provided information to police about the gang, his charges would disappear. Crash considered his options, neither of them good. With a lengthy criminal record, a conviction might mean several years in state prison. But if the Brotherhood discovered the betrayal, he would be marked for death. Crash, ever the hustler, tried to play both sides. He figured he'd keep the ABT in the dark, and by having a cop on speed dial, gain street cred. In later years, Crash bragged to Carroll and others about being connected and protected by the law, a claim that was part fact, part front. Each man kept secrets. Crash played coy about his criminal life, and Lair deflected questions about police business. They came up with a phrase to describe the mutual deception: what's understood need not be discussed. Steve always called me the ABT historian, Crash said. He'd call me if he had questions about the family or if he needed to know who someone was. We spent hours and hours on the phone. A committee of five generals runs the Brotherhood and appoints its chairman. From 2001 to 2011, that man was Frank Roach Jr., also known as Pancho, a longtime romantic friend of Crash's mother. Pancho was a messianic figure in the ABT, worshipped for his granite-like persona, cold, hard, smooth, and a ruthless gravitas when it came to Brotherhood business. Police knew his malevolent reputation, but little else. Crash demystified the man. He began recording phone calls with Pancho and other ABT leaders in June 2005, opening a spigot of new information. Police gained insight about the inner workings of the gang, its blood-in, blood-out membership doctrine, and the temperament of its leaders. They learned about the ABT's delicate relationship with Mexican cartels and how large quantities of methamphetamine made it across the border. Crash opened the door, Lair turned on the light, and the FBI walked in the room. I trusted Steve, Crash said. He seemed like a friend, until the point I realized he wasn't. He used my information to get where he wanted. The U.S. Department of Justice monitored the ABT as it mutated from a prison gang into a crime family. But with small numbers and limited reach, the Brotherhood didn't merit a mention in the Bureau's 2005 gang assessment report. A pair of ghastly Dallas-area murders in August 2006 and similar crimes near Houston set off warning bells. An ABT officer slit the throat of a 43-year-old man from Fort Worth he believed was a snitch, and gang members murdered, dismembered, and dumped a 19-year-old Mesquite woman's body in a reservoir northeast of Dallas. Days later, an FBI agent asked Crash to help locate her body. Crash led officers to a public boat ramp on the southwest side of Lake Ray Hubbard, where his sources said brothers discarded her body. Cadaver dogs and dive teams were unable to locate her remains. They've never been recovered. Crash's run as an informant was interrupted in early 2008 when he was sentenced to 3 years in state prison for beating his mother. The feds flirted with the idea of intervening in the case, but decided against it, in part because they hoped he might be more useful inside the penitentiary. Carroll visited Crash once in prison. He sat behind plexiglass, wore a white jumpsuit, spoke into a phone. He just sat there saying, "Do this, do this, do this," Carroll said. "Lie about this and this and that. Go here and here and here." And I just got tired of it. I was done listening to his bullshit. She marched out 45 minutes into a 2-hour visit. It was a cold move. Gang members do hard time in Texas. They are locked alone in a cell about the size of a walk-in closet, 5 feet by 9 feet, all day and night, except for a solitary hour of recreation time. Carroll moved home to Murphy, where she was hired and fired from a series of jobs. Ike Blevins said his daughter usually lasted 2 weeks. They'd catch her doing drugs, he said, or she'd have one of her outbursts and scream at them like she screams at me. Her instability often pivoted on paranoia, Ike said, whether caused by bipolar disorder or drugs. Carol is what's known as a trash can junkie, an addict who will abuse just about any street or prescription drug. But when it's her money, she buys methamphetamine, ice. It turns her into a superhero. She radiates confidence. Her mind snaps, speech quickens, senses sharpen until there's a pinprick of apprehension. Carol said it begins as an uneasy sense, more than a sound, the flutter-in-the-gut feeling of sitting alone in an empty house late at night, a radio hiss in the distance, bare feet across the back porch, water quivering into a low boil. 3 times during Crash's 3-year sentence, Carol showed up at Green Oaks Psychiatric Hospital considering suicide. She told doctors in April 2010 that her boyfriend tried to choke her to death with a pillowcase. True. And later expressed fear when he was released from prison. Ike Blevins paid college expenses each of the 3 times Carol enrolled. She was studying audio engineering at Collin County Community College in November 2010 when Crash was released from prison. He sent a cab to pick her up at the Plano campus. They reunited at a Whataburger in Carrollton. He was fat and I was fat and we hugged and I was genuinely glad to see him, Carol said. I loved him at one time, but I didn't know where it was going.
Wade, Dion Cooley.
What is it? How much do you think it's going to take you to get settled in Dallas? Right off, just first deal, not all the way around.
That's on my own. If I go get me one extended stay, mm-hmm. Usually run anywhere from 149 to 179. I don't know. It's been 3 years. The one over it, and I don't know where you want. Do you want me in your jurisdiction, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter, but I could probably take greater care of...
If there's a problem, you're
a room with the deposit for weeks can run me $250 to $300. That's just not good. I need some glue. Honestly, I need to have a phone.
Crash quickly regained favor with the feds. 11 days after his release, agents with Homeland Security Investigations signed him as a $500 a week confidential informant. Soon after, Crash called his old connection, Pancho, the ABT's top general, and asked for a cut of the Brotherhood's business selling stolen heavy-duty trucks to a Mexican drug cartel. Pancho delegated the details to James Samsel, Skits, who was then a major with an ABT cell in Odessa. Skits's only stipulation was that Crash also buy a collection of stolen guns and pay a premium for both. The feds financed the deal. Agents handed Crash an envelope with $8,500 in cash. They told him to pay Skits $6,000 for the stolen property and use $2,500 for expenses. Crash immediately bought a $200 bag of crack. He and Carol smoked most of it during the 5-hour drive to East Texas the next day. The deal went down without a hitch, except for this. Crash skimmed money from the government and scammed Skits and another ABT officer out of $2,000. The feds suspected the double cross by the time he and Carol rolled back into Dallas. Crash hung up on agents when they ordered him to deliver the stolen trucks. He spent the Brotherhood's money on crack cocaine. The bender lasted nearly 2 days. Crash and Carol stood in a second-story room of an Extended Stay America hotel. The air was acrid, hazy with smoke from drug pipes, throbbing with voices and party music. Carol stepped toward Crash. She never saw the punch coming. It landed below her left eye, cracking her cheekbone. "I was going to hug him," Carol said. "He thought I was going to hit him." The crowd called Crash out for the buzzkill, so he and Carol decided to leave. Dallas police watched as Crash eased a silver Mitsubishi Galant onto Greenville Avenue. Squad cars swarmed like hornets pouring out of a hive. An officer found $1,236 in Crash's pocket and crack cocaine in his bag. After a pat-down, Carol was deemed clean and left to wait alone in the backseat of a squad car. An officer eventually swung the door open, and a man with square shoulders and a bald head stepped forward. He wore jeans and a jacket and had an informal air. It was Steve Lair, the Carrollton cop who 5 years earlier had persuaded Crash to betray the Aryan Brotherhood. Now he was a deputized officer with Homeland Security investigations. "Are you Carol Blevins?" Lair asked, bending down to look at her swollen face. He sniffed disapproval and stepped away. Carol thought nothing of it at the time, a vague face on a drug-fogged night during a blurry time in her life. Some moments seem like that, trivial and incremental. Tick, tick, ticks on a timepiece counting down the end. Carol's future is more uncertain than most. Maybe that's why, when she ruminates about the waste of her life and all the wreckage, her thoughts inevitably drift to the one towering thing she's done right. Fleeting seconds marked the beginning of her journey in the back of a squad car during a chance meeting with a federal agent. Officers discovered an email from Carol on Crash's phone that night. "You are my love, my life, and everything I am. I am sorry for my mistakes. If I need to prove my loyalty, I will do anything you ask. I will die for you. I will kill for you." Police let her go. Carol walked a half block to a gas station, called her dad, and begged him to rescue her again. She waited under the pallid discord of a streetlight, smoking a cigarette. Her fiancé was headed back to prison, a fate she escaped by luck. Her face was broken and blackened, the color of eggplant, an unremarkable fact in a gang that implicitly condones the abuse of women and explicitly strips them of dignity. None of that mattered. Carol had found a family. "At no point did I think about stopping seeing guys in the ABT," she said. "It was my life now."
My Aryan Princess is written by Scott Farwell and edited by Mike Wilson and Leona Allen. To hear the remaining chapters of the story, visit dallasnews.com/ABT for direct downloads and links to our show in Apple Podcasts and other audio players. You'll also find exclusive DMN subscription offers at dallasnews.com/listen. Thanks for listening.